was a, what I would frame it, a completely remarkable start to the season, given where we started last year. I think there was suddenly an expectation. Everybody was talking about us going up automatically after 2 months. And, you know, when we were losing ground on Pompey, it's, oh no, we're losing ground on the title kind of thing. And I think there was a lot of it is that kind of sudden swing of expectation, the sudden swing of disappointment when it all kind of, when the wheels came tumbling off in classic Oxford United fashion, when our manager buggered off. My anger still, I mean, and I don't actually blame him for it, but my anger about, if there's any anger, is still directed at Liam Manning. I don't blame him for making the decision he made given the circumstances, but I'm still allowed to be pissed off at him for buggering off, like, after having had a significant amount of investment thrown at him at a football club, to just fucking up sticks and walk away like that. And I know we shouldn't expect loyalty, and I know we shouldn't expect anything like this from football people, but it still really irks me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of the players that he brought in possibly came here to play for him as well, and with some of the players, they're like, well, this isn't what I signed up for, which I don't know, is possibly a bit naive, because that's always the case in football, isn't it? There's always a good chance your manager's going to go for whatever reason. But
I think that Liam Manning, to understand why he made the decision he did, think it may be a mistake, because he's not doing that well at Bristol City, and he could easily be turfed out. And then he turns into a not the same style, but like a Chris Wilder character, you know, kind of tainted. A little bit more time with us just to build his reputation would have really helped. And I think the players are probably the same. You're right, dudes, that they shouldn't be shocked that a manager leaves. Don't seem to be able to think more than about 3 months in advance.
You look at yesterday's lineup, there's only two Manning signings in that starting 11. I kind of agree that I think the Robinson hangover, or the last season hangover, is probably still as big an impact as anything. You've got Rodriguez and Harris. Yeah, that's the only two. And then you've got, I mean, three out of the four defenders are last season defenders. The team is just so unsettled, isn't it? Because no one's had a chance to really have, you know, like the 2-3 transfer windows they talked about, to really put a team together that's sort of in the image of that coach.
I do think that the defence thing is a massive issue as well, because we've got players who have talent in certain areas. I don't look at any of them, with the possible exception of Elliot Moore, as being good enough that I would categorise them as promotion-winning defences. But even Elliot Moore's got his frailties and his fragilities, and he's had a good season compared to all of his other seasons for us. I think it's just a massive psychological thing going on, and I don't know what the root of it is, but I just think there's a, whether it's a confidence issue or what it is, but there's absolutely no way a high-performing football team should have been in the situation that we were in. And, you know, and I really like Des Buckingham as a person, but I think he's got to take some of the responsibility for that. I would have been, if this was a Carl Robinson thing, I'd been hauling him over the coals for psychological performance of the football team. And as a result, you know, I'm going to have to do the same for Buckingham. I think he's got to find a better way of motivating them to be more ruthless. And he's not doing that at the moment.
It is psychological. It can't be tactical. It's not like we throw caution to the wind and we're making tons of chances and then get caught out.
No, it's quite the opposite.
Exactly, yeah.
God, I would love to throw caution to the wind. I would love to see them throw caution to the wind.
But then, you know, but then that's what we did after Cheltenham equalised. Just do that a bit more. Yeah. Actually, that seems lower risk than what we're currently doing.
Ben Perkis said something on the Dub about, this was weeks ago, that his observation was that we weren't pressing as hard as we did under Manning. And I wonder whether that's more, there's a broader management issue there, which is they're not under enough pressure from Buckingham. He comes over as being a little bit too nice. I do remember years ago Jamie Cook once describing, this was a long time after he left Oxford, but he once described Chris Wilder as a brilliant coach but a terrible man, and that's probably probably kind of the sweet spot you want for a manager, isn't it?
I think, I mean, his interview after the game yesterday sounded to me like, again, it's like very much a copy and paste interview, but a man who's under no pressure whatsoever, just happy to just put it all down to players finishing. He just sounded so relaxed and so, and I don't want him to be like all nervous and worried, but I want him to, I want to come across with some kind of humility. I didn't hear that at all. And I was kind of thinking possibly during Grant Ferguson's latest trip over, he's just basically been told the job's safe, mate, whatever. You know, there was no indication that he had himself had any part in it when he had obviously picked the team, the tactics, the formation, you know, the substitutes.
The number of times that, I didn't hear the interview yesterday, but the number of times that over the years that managers have been interviewed, and when you actually listen to them, they kind of go, oh, well, the buck stops with me, which, you know, it does. And then immediately after, Jerome goes to the phones and kind of somebody says, well, he doesn't take any responsibility. Is everyone else's fault apart from his own? So, well, he did actually take responsibility for it, but then he was trying to explain what the problem was. So I think that's my only thought, is you just need to be careful that is he trying to explain the situation or hold people to account? I do think, generally speaking, he comes over as somebody who doesn't, he's not a disciplinarian. And I kind of, probably in only in hindsight, I guess that was a big thing with Manning. Everything was organised. There was a system and a structure and a, you know, for everything from recruitment through to tactics. And I just feel he lacks that. I mean, he must have something because he's had a decent coaching career, but his quality isn't disciplining players. And that's where Rodriguez, I think, struggles, because I think, you know, he benefited from working in a more structured environment.
I think you look at, I think he's a very particular type of manager. And I think you just need to look at Josh Murphy. Is this might be confirmation bias, I don't know, but you know, Josh Murphy is a guy who's had his kind of, you know, might not be right to categorize him as mental health kind of challenges, but he's, you know, he's struggled with kind of getting his head straight, certainly from a footballing perspective, and he's playing absolutely tremendously. He seems like he's a kind of player who benefits significantly from the Des Buckingham arm around the shoulder kind of caring type approach to management, which somebody like, for example, I'm not sure Cameron Brannigan wants that, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, he'll put in 100% every single game anyway, because he's really committed, but I think he probably would have more respect for a manager who, you know, gives him rockets up the ass rather than, you know, a little pat on the head kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, that might all be completely bollocks, but it's kind of the impression that I get. Should we talk about our actual content?
We didn't actually, in all of that, didn't actually mention the internationals that we have got, did we?
No, we didn't. none of them got a mention, apart from me ragging on our defence for being rubbish in one of our internationals.
Actually, I feel a bit sorry for central defenders, because I think suddenly in the last few years, the way central defenders are expected to play has completely changed. Suddenly they're expected to be able to play from the back. And a lot of them, that's not why they went into central defenderness, is it?
No.
And I feel a bit sorry for them, because I think there's a bit of a transition at the moment with central defenders.
I remember Ryan Clark saying towards the end of his kind of time at Oxford that who would have been his manager at the time? Oh, Michael Appleton. You know, he wanted this distribution model where he was distributing to the wide players, or basically ball playing goalkeepers. Mm. And Ryan Clark had spent an entire career just kicking it as far as he possibly could. And suddenly he's supposed to be like Glenn Hoddle. And I think you're right, Rosie. There's this going to be this generational gap that we'll look back on and we'll go, do you remember when they all tried to pass and they couldn't? And now, now, yeah, they are all Glenn, all the centre-backs are Glenn Hoddle type players.
Rich, do you want to intro the this week's?
Yeah, we've just had an international break, which wasn't something that used to be a huge deal for us, I don't think, but since we've been playing with more internationals and under 21 internationals, signing players on loan who are internationals, has become sort of more of a prominent thing. And I thought it might be a nice idea to look at the list of players who won international caps whilst playing for Oxford, and just have a discussion really about some of these players and how it compares to today's experience of players going away and causing matches to be postponed, etc., etc. Kieran Brown didn't actually play either of the Northern Ireland matches. I thought by the time we recorded this, he'd be a couple of steps closer to the record holder that it wasn't to be. The player who won the most caps whilst playing for Oxford was a Northern Irish player. And yeah, and that's Jim McGill. And he played 18 times for Northern Ireland whilst wearing the yellow shirt.
Your mum bloody loves him, doesn't she?
Nobody loves Jim McGill more than my mum. She loves that man a lot more than she loves my dad. Possibly even her children, I'm not sure. But no, she absolutely loves him, yeah.
Because of what he did on the football field, or because he's a...
Well, and because off, because, you know, he's got this lovely... I love him a little bit myself, actually. But he was just like this really friendly, Irish, blue-eyed, blonde lad. And she loved him. And she was doing some fundraising at the time, and he helped out. And I remember he phoned our house one day to speak to my mum. I said, Mum, Jim McGilton's on the phone. She was like, yeah, of course he is. I was like, no, really, Jim McGilton's on the phone? And I think when she hung up, her words were, oh my God, I love him. I want to have his babies.
And did she?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
My little sister, Jemima.
He paid you a compliment on the internet, didn't he?
He did, actually, because I've got a Jim McGilton T-shirt. I don't know if it was, well, I mean, it is a compliment.
No, I mean, no. I mean,
but it's also a bit
pervy. It was extremely creepy and pervy, yeah.
Yeah, but who cares? Because I've got a Jim McGilton T-shirt, which I did actually try and look to wear for this episode. And I took a picture of me wearing it, which I was quite a bit younger when I wore it, so it was a bit tighter than it was. And so I took a selfie of... just the T-shirt around, the pictures on the chest. And I did tweet it to Jim McGilton, and he said, oh, you've got some front wearing that. But yeah, best moment of my life.
Yeah.
It's the best creepy thing that's happened to me on Twitter. Do you remember those little models that they used to have with the footballers with the large heads in the 90s? I've got one of those of him as well.
Have you?
I should have looked out all my Jim McGilton memorabilia, shouldn't I?
Put it next to our Gareth Southgate.
Oh, yeah.
Well, funnily enough, Rage Online's pen picture of Jim McGilton includes the sentence, wobbled his head when he ran.
He did, yeah. And he always had his thumbs up when he ran as well.
Oh, that's nice.
Like to the fans.
Yeah.
Hey.
He sort of ran with his thumbs up, wobbling his head. Yeah.
No wonder your mum loved him.
Yeah, she loved him. Positive person. Yeah. I always say, whenever you see the phrase, give your head a wobble, I always think of Jim McGilton.
So he's actually still in the game. Since last summer, he's been managing Cliftonville in Northern Ireland. So I'm assuming he's kind of gone back home.
Well, there was I don't know if you remember, but there was a rumour before Merrion Smith took over and Patterson was kind of caretaker manager. There was a rumour that Pato was going to bring in Jim McGilton as a player coach. He was going to bring in Jim McGilton as player coach, and he was also going to bring in Steve Claridge just for like the end of the season. But then Jim Smith came in and brought in Cham and Toya and Jay Smith instead.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that season would have panned out if it had been Patterson in charge and with McGilton and Claridge up front. I wonder if we'd have still gone down.
Patterson and McGilton overlap in their playing time.
No, not at Oxford, no. But Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering what the link was there. That was all. Yeah,
go on, give us some surprising internationals then, Rich.
Well, I was just thinking there was just mentioned overlapping international careers with Jim McGilton, and I think one player would be Paul Key, who appeared in a Timmy Mallett tweet this week. Did anyone see that?
He did.
He looked like he was a security guard at the Northern Ireland Assembly. Paul Key, not Timmy Mallett, obviously.
Mallett, I don't know, that mallet's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, Paul Key. So what years would he have played?
He was sort of late 80s.
So apparently he played 7 times for Northern Ireland, and he played for them 9 times in total, which is quite incredible.
Yeah, he was not good. Well, he had his moments. I mean, but he was calamitous, I think, is the word I would use for Paul Key.
I love a calamitous goalkeeper.
He was, I mean, you know, in hindsight, he was absolutely hilarious. And, you know, I'll show you some of the goals because it is really worth watching some of his blunders. There was, we played Aston Villa in the Cup And that one in particular, the two goals were just brilliant. He came so far off his line for one of them. And then Villa took a shot which hit him while he was sort of on the edge of the area. A crowded area, I'd like to say as well. There was absolutely no need for him to be as far out as he was. It hit him and went in. It was just, it's brilliant. I mean, at the time, it probably wasn't as funny as it is now. But that's the thing about football, isn't it? We can all look back and laugh. We will. But at the same time, we had a very important game at the end of the season at Tranmere, and the season that was 91-92, where Robert Maxwell died and they had to sell, well, all our players, but they only sold Lee Nogan and Paul Simpson in the end. And we stayed up against the odds on the last day of the season. He was phenomenal that day. He had an incredible game, but that was probably it.
Paul Simpson felt like we'd sold the entire team to you, Rosie.
Yeah, they might as well have done.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned.
Who did Paul Key take over from? And then who?
Oh, Alan Judge. It was Alan Judge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then Ken Vasey came in and they
were... The tree.
The tree, yeah.
He was called the tree, wasn't he?
He was called the tree. I don't know why, because to me, that's something you do in netball, is when the other team are trying to throw at you, stand like this. That was the tree when I was at school. So, because trees are quite stationary as well. So it's a bit of an odd name.
We watched a compilation on YouTube the other day, didn't we? And Ken Vasey just kept making mistakes.
He
they were like 10 goals and they were all his fault.
But compared to Paul Key, he was amazing.
And we had a player of the 90s called Ken. I mean,
I think on his Wikipedia page it says he's called Kenneth brackets Ken.
No.
he was in goal for Dorchester when we beat them 9-1, and
he was, yeah.
I remember of it, he was brilliant.
He was brilliant. Do you remember he came out to the second half when he was in the London Road, and he came out and he was wearing an Oxford United bobble hat. I thought it was nice.
So Paul Key wasn't the most capped goalkeeper whilst an Oxford United player.
Andre Arendse.
Yeah.
Andre Arendse is correct. Yeah, he played 11 times for South Africa and he was a solid, like, first name on the team sheet, South African international.
Wasn't there a World Cup as well while he was here?
Yeah.
Didn't he play in the World Cup? Because I remember, for as much as my mum loved Jim Magilton, my brother hated Andre Arendse and he spent that entire World Cup absolutely furious that Arendse had that kind of platform.
I think in a game against Spain, it may have been 2-0, basically was at fault, like majorly at fault for two goals, like caught in possession outside the box or something insane like that. Just embarrassed himself on the world stage.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Those are my favourite things in football.
Yeah.
So how many players have we had who were Oxford United players whilst playing at a major tournament, either the European Championship, the World Cup, Africa Cup of Nations, or the South CONCACAF, whatever it is.
CONCACAF?
Yeah, it's the South.
I think Arendse might be the only one, actually. Yeah, I think he might be. There are obviously players who have played significant roles in major tournaments, but I don't think while they were with us.
No.
There was an international break in the sort of mid to late 80s where we had more internationals representing their countries than any other team in English football. Ooh. So we had Ray Houghton, John Aldridge, Neil Slatter, Jeremy Charles, Dave Langan, I think it was. And no other team in the country had that many international, because there were so many British players in the league. There were fewer internationals generally across the whole division.
True.
But not Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I feel a bit sorry for John Aldridge, because his international career is only ever going to be remembered for one thing, isn't it? And that's when he went absolutely mental at the fourth official in USA 94. I know, it was brilliant. It was my favourite favourite moment of the whole tournament. We turned around and called him a twat.
Yeah, he'd only just really started his international career when he was playing for us, and then he soon obviously moved on to Liverpool, didn't he? But I was looking again at his stats, Aldridge, his goal scoring stats across his entire career are just ridiculous. They're kind of like Ibrahimovic levels of of goals. They're just scary. So he scored 90 for us in 141 games, according to Rage Online.
Oh dear.
So 84-85, he scored 34 in a season. Is that still a record for us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By a long way.
I couldn't think of anyone.
I can't improve on that.
I don't know. Steve Basham and Andy Scott were pushing it with their top goal scorer with eight goals a season.
Not even combined throughout their Oxford careers. I don't think they scored that one.
Rich, I don't know if you have this stat readily to hand. What's the country that Oxford United players we've had most representatives for? It's got to be Northern Ireland, hasn't it?
It's Northern Ireland, yeah. So you've got Magilton, Kieran Brown, aforementioned Paul Key, Billy Hamilton, and then going further down the list, some of these are really obscure. So we've got Phil Gray, maybe not quite so obscure, but. David Sloan and Ray Gaston? Anybody?
Nope.
Ray Gaston?
Wasn't he a ladybird in Ben and Holly?
Yes, he was.
Gaston the ladybird was...
Oh, Ben and Holly is so good.
What's Ben and Holly?
It's a kids' TV show. It's by the same people who did Peppa Pig, but it's so much better than Peppa Pig.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's superb.
Yeah, it is really good. But yeah, you're right. He was also a character in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
There's a really I know this is slightly off topic, but there's a really surreal. there's an episode of Ben and Holly where they go into space, and you know it's when my kids were getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm not convinced it actually exists, but I'm pretty sure I saw it.
Whether you were just half asleep on the sofa while it was happening,
dreaming about Ben and Holly in space.
I don't remember it, but it sounds great.
Just a quick production note. Can we please have an off-topic jingle, please?
That's going to be played a lot. A lot more than the topical content. I'm just wondering, who was our first international? Was it David Sloan?
Or was it Dave Roberts?
Ray Gaston was with Oxford 1968 to 1969. 12 appearances, 2 goals. One appearance for Northern Ireland.
Oh, I've just Googled Dave Roberts. Apparently there's loads of Dave Robertses. That's awkward, isn't it?
Really? That's unusual because it's quite a...
Flipping heck.
An unusual name.
Yeah. It's not the Dave Roberts, the baseball manager. not the man from the Bromley Boys. It's just loads.
Try putting David. Might not return.
Why don't you put Dave Roberts, Oxford United?
Yes.
Just welcome to the How to Use Google corner of the Oxford podcast.
Dave Fraser Roberts. Quick facts. Oh, he's still alive.
And that's a fact.
I know he was later than David Sloan, so he was 73 to 78.
So Dave Roberts played for Wales, which I think, looking at this list, is the second most represented country. So we've had mentioned Neil Slatter, Andy Melville, who came up in a previous pod, played 11 times for Wales whilst with us. Dave Roberts, Dean Saunders. Not going to talk about him, are we? Jeremy Childs and Craig Davies played twice for Wales before he buggered off unceremoniously.
Yeah, he was a funny one, wasn't he?
One of my favourite. Sorry, I am going to talk about Dean Saunders. one of my favourite Dean Saunders moments was I think we were we playing Wrexham or something like that, and we were on telly. I think this is right. And he was the co-commentator, and there was like an incident where somebody had gone in very late on a player. And he was very, very, very much on Wrexham's side. He was very, very biased towards Wrexham. And like there was this incident where everybody was like, oh, okay, that's clearly a free kick to Oxford, because it was this horrifying late challenge kind of thing. And he initially said, he's gone down really easily there, you know, perfectly fine tackle. And they showed it again and again and again. It became more and more obvious. It was an absolute horror challenge. and then they went to half time, and on the pitch it was the presenter bloke and David James, and they kept going back to him and saying, like, Dean, Are you sure about that decision? And he kept saying they showed the clip. They were all watching the clip at the same time, and there was this look of absolute like amazement on their face as Dean Saunders was doubling down on the fact that he thought it was really funny. I'm going to find that.
Like that. Yeah, yeah, because I remember
because he was an idiot.
Yeah, but Dean Saunders is one of those people who, whenever he's co-commentating, he's trending on Twitter. And that's never good as a commentator. If you're trending on Twitter, unless you're Ali McCoy, everybody is enjoying what you're saying.
Yeah. I think it's worth mentioning Mark Watson. I mean, he wasn't in a play for us in a particularly good period of our history, but still the sixth most capped player for Canada.
Wow.
It's quite impressive. 78 caps. And I didn't realise he'd gone to sort of fairly illustrious coaching career after retiring. Mainly in and around the MLS, most recently at Minnesota.
He was decent though, wasn't he? He was a decent player, I think. So did he left at the end of that season, didn't he? At 2000,
summer 2000, he left.
Yeah, yeah. So he must have then been replaced by someone like Jarman,
Ian McGuckin,
John Shepherd, someone like that.
Just going back to my family from here. So my sister-in-law, when they used to have the bookies inside the stadium, and we'd always put money on first goal scorer, and my sister-in-law has somehow won money on John Shepherd, Peter Fear. I think it was Jarman or McGuckin, just all these really dreadful players who would have only ever scored once, and she always won money on them.
Amazing.
I know.
I'm, because we're talking about 2000-2001, I did unearth the story of Steve Anthrobus's international career. Steve Anthrobus had come off a terrible season and was about to embark on an even worse season with us. And in 2000 was called up to the Barbados squad. He then flew out to Barbados. When he got there, they realised that his paperwork wasn't in order. So he flew home. That was the beginning and end of his international career.
I mean, that's quite fitting for the man, isn't it?
And then wasn't he done for dogging?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in 2006, quite confusing, the stories about it. He was done for outraging public decency for having sex on a picnic blanket with a woman who wasn't his wife. But he was done three times. So I don't know if that was like the same period or three separate times.
Learn from your mistakes, Steve.
two of them, the outraging public decency on two of those occasions was witnessed by children.
Oh my God.
Were they performances for us? Witnessed by children.
The bit I haven't been able to get my head around is he was fined £500. The woman he was having sex with was fined £250. Is it better to not be fined that much, or do you want to be so have such sexual prowess that you're being fined twice as much as the person you're having sex with?
Maybe it's level of exposure.
they just figured she'd suffered enough.
Yeah. So you've chosen to have sex in public with Steve Anthrobus.
Interestingly enough, it was quite a point made in the stories that I read about it.
how long were you researching this?
Yeah, far, far too long. There was quite a lot made about the fact that it was on a picnic blanket. Public outrage. Outraging public decency. I don't know. I feel there's a deep dive. Oh, no, that's not the right phrase. There's a story behind that.
Oh, dear.
He apparently had to tell his wife. Sorry, I do know lots more about this. He had to tell his wife immediately before he went to court. Like on the day he went to court, he went, I'm just popping out. because I'm about to get done for having sex in public by with somebody who isn't you.
Was that on each occasion he had to do that?
Yes, right. Again?
You didn't use the picnic blanket again, did you?
Well, this time I'm throwing it away.
It says in this article, Scott, that his nickname was Buster. I don't remember that.
Yeah, I thought that.
I just remember him being the bus.
But I guess we didn't really take to him well enough to come up with
a similar. No, which is a shame because Anthrobus fitting with Vengabus is just such a wasted a wasted chant. Just remember the next line.
The Anthrobus is coming. Exactly.
That's what those children were singing.
We did have an international player involved in a rage of public decency whilst playing for Northern Ireland in a tournament before he joined us when he was playing for Burnley. That's Billy Hamilton. So we're talking about the 82 World Cup. Billy Hamilton's playing for Northern Ireland. So a few hours previous to this game, West Germany played Austria, which is known as what, the disgrace of Dijon, is it? Because back then, the final game of the qualifying groups in the tournament weren't played simultaneously. So teams in the last game knew what they had to do to qualify. So West Germany played Austria, and they knew that if West Germany won by one or two goals, both teams would then go into the what would have been the quarterfinals. So West Germany scored a goal, and then they just sort of passed it around like they were just sort of practicing, basically. And then just a few hours after that, Spain and Northern Ireland knew that if they had won by, if Northern Ireland won by one goal, then they would both get through as well. At the time, it was seen as like this amazing achievement, you know, these minnows, Northern Ireland beating Spain, you know, this incredible goal, Billy Hamilton crosses to Jerry Armstrong, slides it through. But yeah, same scenario. Both teams went through to the round of 16. And then from the 86 World Cup onwards, they made sure that the final games of each group were played simultaneously to avoid this happening again. Outrageous.
I mean, again, I really like that.
Have you, has anybody ever played his board game?
Billy Hamilton Football Academy.
Yeah.
No, I've never, I did buy it, but I've never played it.
Have you got it?
No, I gave it to a friend as a birthday present.
I'd love to play. That could be an episode one game. Get together and play Billy Hamilton's board game. Did you?
It was during that? While he was injured, he developed it. You go from academy to the World Cup final. And Toys R Us picked it up, and he thought he was going to be a millionaire.
Oh. Is he?
He wasn't.
I'm just going to see if it's...
You can get it on eBay for $21.99 plus postage.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just looking...
It looks in good nick, actually.
Just looking at it on BoardGameGeek.com, and it's got 3 out of 10 on your user reviews.
Oh. That's on BoardGameGeek. What about BoardGameCoolFootballSupporters.com? 10 out of 10 all the way.
That's what geek means these days, though. Sorry, that shocked me.
Still got... Somebody's taken a photo of the underneath of the board game box, and their thumb is just in the top.
Oh yes, I can see it.
Just a little double take there. It's all this talk of Steve Anthropos. I think it's kind of.
You're going to buy it? Are we going to get into a big bidding war on eBay now? Go for it. Hundreds of pounds.
What is this person's really into it? Like, why are they? Assume we've not had an England player.
No,
not well. That should be been the disclaimer at the start of this, that we're only going to talk about full internationals. There'll be people screaming Beano.
Yeah, well, Beano played for the C team. England. Like, when that was while he was at Oxford as well, wasn't it? But I don't really understand. So the C team is like an international tier for non-league footballers, right? Is there an England B team? When do they play?
I don't know if there is now, but there used to be.
Right. There was for a period,
Yeah,
that's where old Joey Barnes' caps came from.
So we never had an England player. What's the most high-profile international country that we've had a player
play for and the most obscure. I'm going to pop in a bid on Gino Van Kessel for playing for Curaçao as being our most obscure international player. That whole phase of our history was weird.
It was, but again, now enough time has passed, I look back on it and I quite like it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think you know, because everybody talks about, you know, like how funny Ivo Pekalski was and how his story was funny. But I don't think Gino Van Kessel gets enough kind of conversation about him, because goal on his debut was outstanding. Mm. It was like an incredible piece of skill. We were like, holy cow, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And then he was absolutely garbage afterwards.
Yeah.
Didn't you have some sort of option on Gino Van Kessel for, like, we could buy him for £800,000 if we wanted to.
Yeah. Ooh. What an offer. Thank you so much.
Did we get first option on that? Oh, great.
Of course they said that.
Let me go and get my purse.
Yeah.
I guess arguably the most high profile success for an Oxford United player whilst playing for us is probably Greg Lee last week, isn't it? Winning
good point.
Bronze medal in the CONCACAF Nations League, is that what it was called?
And he scored, didn't he?
Scored against the USA.
Yeah, in the first minute. And then, that's gutting. Then they equalised, didn't they, in injury time. Classic Greggles, though.
They had not been paying attention to the kind of the coaching videos of how he scores his goals, had they? Because, I mean, that was...
Absolutely.
Vintage Greggles.
Whilst this wasn't while he was playing for us, I would say the most high profile moment has to be, for any of the players on this list, has to be Ray Houghton, doesn't it? At 94 World Cup.
That Ireland team was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that goal against Italy was incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Little forward roll.
Yeah.
It was the little chase beforehand, before he hit the ball. Like the ball just sort of ran loose, from what I remember. Mm. And he kind of scuttled after it. I don't know, like he was just playing park football and just lashed it over. Was it Buffon was in goal?
Yeah, I think it was Buffon, wasn't it, that World Cup?
Yeah, God, still. Yeah, just lashed it over his head, didn't he? Superb.
What was that fact I saw about Buffon recently?
Is it the thing about that he's the only player to have played at the same time as Stanley Matthews? And
so I think this is, was it the last World Cup, was the first World Cup that none of Buffon, Peter Shilton and Stanley Matthews had played at? Which is incredible.
That is absolutely amazing.
It's not quite up there with the Steve Andrebus.
No,
but it's still quite good.
I mean, you know, I worry that the podcast has peaked.
Again, that's what she said. Well, the player who won the most caps overall, even though he only won seven whilst playing for us, is also our most academically intelligent player by a long way, Rhodes scholar Kerry Evans.
Yeah.
Again, talking early 90s.
He's quite an underrated player as well, I think.
Kerry Evans became a psychologist and was a sports psychologist for the All Blacks. All Blacks were going through some sort of big crisis and they remodeled the entire approach to playing for the All Blacks. And he was integral to this process. That transformation became a book which Michael Appleton lived by during his time at Oxford.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good player, but I didn't know he wasn't that good. I never got that impression from him, but he was had all of that going on.
I'm trying to find the name of the book, but if you Google All Black Book, you just get like black books. It's a mystery to me, this.
Bits of Bill Bailey and Dylan Moran.
Yeah.
God, there's loads of books about the All Blacks. They must be pretty big.
But to wind this back to the kind of topics here, is the
one of the topics.
But the kind of the either-or thing,
yeah,
which I've never really understood in the club versus country thing. I mean, I kind of understand why you might be concerned about, you, like, let's say, because Liverpool supporters are kind of really big on not supporting England. I understand why you'd be concerned about your club player being injured whilst on international duty. But there's this gigantic debate about club or country. Why is it a thing where you have to compare your support for either? It's so that people who want an awful lot of kind of football support or posturing is about, I'm a bigger fan than you. And the kind of club versus country thing is like a badge of honour. I support my football club so much that I don't give a shit about England or whatever. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's pointless. And it is very much an English thing as well, isn't it?
I mean, without getting sort of too beard strokey, I mean, is this to do with the same way that the FA Cup's reputation is sort of, you know, been diminished over the years as well? It's like, I guess it could almost all depends on how important Sky Sports thinks a particular brand or a particular league is worthwhile. And, you know, I just think club football has just been built up to such an extent that maybe people just don't see internationals as massively important. And maybe even do players still think it's the pinnacle of their careers to play for their country?
I imagine that on a practical level, playing for your country, particularly if playing in England and you're based in England, it's probably not that big a deal, but it's a big old ball ache to do. It could be perceived as a big old ball ache to do if you're playing so many games in a season and then you get a chance for a week off and then you have to fly to some obscure Eastern European country for a routine 3-0 win that nobody takes much notice of. I don't fully blame the players. I don't think they're kind of making a choice on a emotional level. Yes, just whether you like playing football or not.
Did there used to be as many? I don't remember there being as many friendlies as there are now.
I think there's a lot more international football than there used to be.
Yeah.
If you look at the number of caps that players have won, I know they play for longer nowadays, but and I think it's just lack of, well, because it was so expensive, I suppose, to go to other countries.
And also just the tournaments themselves are bigger. I mean, the next World Cup's going to be like 87 teams or something ridiculous. I hate FIFA.
Yeah. is that like a permanent change or is that?
No, it's a permanent change. Every FIFA president comes in with a revolutionary change to football, primarily because what they want to do is they want to increase the number of countries that get the opportunity to play a World Cup or an international tournament of some description, so they can secure votes from the smaller countries. So this is entirely, so Gianni Infantino has made this change so that clubs who usually just miss out on the World Cup and hardly ever make it to World Cups suddenly realise they're the ones in the fringes, they won't be able to make it into the World Cup this time round. So they'll vote for him to be president again.
What else? I mean, another thing they could do to get more of the smaller countries in is to stop fixing the draw for the groups, for the qualifiers. And basically, because you have the... Just pick them all out.
Yeah.
So you've got a group that's got England, France, Germany, Spain, Portugal. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd
be brilliant.
But I mean, I hate seedings in football.
Yeah,
anyway,
no, I do.
So
well.
The Champions League is the most catastrophically tedious tournament on the planet. I'm going on one of my rants now, but it's the same when you get like the FA Cup and they say like Man City get drawn against Arsenal in the third round and everyone's going, oh my God, this is an incredible tie. Manchester City are going to play Arsenal. Sorry.
And it's actually Man City's reserves are going to play Arsenal's reserves.
Oh man, sorry.
All this talk of seeding, I just keep thinking of Steve Anfield.